to smoke about this time of the day. And all this is keeping me to where I can't go do it. Now, I'm gonna go do it.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast, where we are living in 2009 and would please like to stay there. I am V, I am your host, and today we are going to talk about episode 4 of Teen Mom Moving On. If you guys have noticed, I've changed the podcast episode names into sessions because it's been getting too confusing for me to say on this episode of About This Time of Day, we're talking about episode whatever of Teen Mom. So now this is session 8. Of About This Time of Day, because we're smoking, having a nice smoke session, talking some Teen Mom, because that's what we do on About This Time of Day. And we're going to talk about episode 4 of Teen Mom. You see how that works out? I'm very proud of myself. This session's companion is a little NYC flow in flower form. Your girl needs to start saving some money, so she's gonna try using my basic marijuana flower for this episode. So stick with me. It's been a minute since I just kind of puffed on a pipe before. So I'm hoping that it's going to be good. I've had this strain before and I really like it. It's helpful for my back pain and all that good stuff. So I think we'll have a good episode today, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. Episode 4 of Teen Mom's description reads, Amber and Gary's arguing finally reaches a boiling point, while Caitlin struggles to find a home when her mother moves away. Newly single mom Macy has a change of heart, and boy crazy Farah opts for some protection. Okay, let's see what we're getting into this episode. So before I really get started here, let me just say that as much as I love flower, breaking up some buds, rolling a blunt, a joint, packing a bowl, packing my vape, I gotta say, this shit is hella messy, okay? Your girl just like spilled a bunch of shit all over the place, had to spend 15 minutes just cleaning herself up before we could get started on the fucking podcast. So hopefully the rest of this goes a little bit smoother than the last 15 minutes here. Jesus Christ. Episode 4 of Teen Mom starts with Amber. I'm a little nervous because the description said Amber and Gary's arguing had reached a boiling point when I really thought that happened last episode. So let's see what happens here. We open on Amber and Gary enjoying a date. Amber's voiceover is a little alarming because she says that since their last big fight, Gary has been trying to make Amber happy. So he's been doing nice things for her and taking her out. I'm sorry, who hit who in the face again? Who pushed who into a wall and strangled them? And he's trying to make you happy. Okay, Amber. All right. We see them having a cute date with Leah in tow at a swings and things kind of mini golf arcade park, whatever your local mini golf arcade park is called. Ours is called Swings and Things. So I hope you have one in your area. They're pretty fun. Amber is doing the batting cages, and Gary decides to take a turn. They're both having fun and laughing, and it looks like a good time. Until Leah ruins everything by having a dirty diaper. Gary asks Amber to please change Leah because there are no changing tables in the men's room. Amber's voiceover tells the viewer that just as I thought Gary and I could have a romantic outing, Leah's diaper needs to be changed. How does that take away from your romantic outing? I get that it's not romantic to change a diaper, but you're a mom. That's just an inevitability of life at this point. That's just something that you need to accept when you go out now. I'm sorry. Regardless, Amber takes Leah to the bathroom and sees there are no changing tables in the woman's bathroom either, so I'm glad at least this place isn't sexist. Amber takes Leah out of the bathroom and proceeds to lay her on one of the dining tables that are in the little cafeteria area. You know, there's a snack bar near the arcade, so there's some tables to sit down at. Since there was no place to put Leah in the bathroom, I guess Amber thought the next best thing was an area where people will eat their food later. Gary comes over and Amber kind of asks for his help, but Gary just can't wrap his mind around this new invention, the diaper.
Amber, you have to do this. Confusing. It's like a freaking puzzle.
Okay, to be fair, I think he's trying to put Leah's outfit back on after the diaper, so maybe that is a little bit more confusing. But it's no fucking Rubik's Cube, Gary. Are you kidding me right now? Like, I feel like he's just saying this so he can continue not to have to do diaper work because it's gross to him, he doesn't like to do it, and hey, if he just acts like he doesn't know how to do it, or does it in a shitty way every time, Amber just won't bother with it anymore. It's a classic boys trick. I don't mean to be sexist, but I saw it on Everybody Loves Raymond. So Gary, I'm on to you. So, not gonna lie, Amber's next scene, I'm a little confused about still. I've watched it twice and I'm not quite clear on what happened, but I'll recap it for you as best I can. The scene opens with Gary sitting in a classroom, and Amber's voiceover lets the viewer know that Gary has decided to take some classes at the same time that Amber is taking her GED classes. So now, they have to figure out Leah's schedule between Amber's classes, Gary's classes, and Gary's work. I don't think Amber is working at this time. Gary comes into the room of their apartment. Amber is sitting on the couch as usual in the living room with Leah on her lap, and Gary says, "Well, who's going to watch Leah when you're in school?" Amber asks, "What are you doing?" You know, because I imagine they have it worked out to where that day, whatever day it was, Gary watches her when Amber is studying for her GED. Gary says that he has to study for a huge test today, and he can't study with Leah around. This makes Amber upset. She starts off somewhat calmly. She's trying to work through her schedule. She says out loud something about, "Well, okay, you get off at 6, blah, blah, blah," and Gary interrupts her with something innocuous. That's what really starts the argument. When she was interrupted, she was already frustrated, and then he interrupts her, making her more upset, more frustrated. And then it goes into, why can't you just watch her? Why did you decide to do this last minute? How is it possible that Amber says she did an entire book report with Leah on her lap? Not that we saw. But Gary can't study for a test. The fight devolves further into Gary saying, "Well, I do harder shit than you do, Amber. I'm working on harder things than you are, Amber. That book was easy. That book you had to work on was easy." He actually says that and says it in that way. What a fucking asshole. There's no reason to go there. And she even responds in the same way I would, go figure. "Well, is that because I'm stupid? My book was easy because I'm stupid. Is that what you're saying?" I think that's what he's trying to say. You know, he does say, "I'm doing harder things than you." So it's not like he thinks very highly of what she's doing. And I can't say getting a GED is on the same level of college work, but that's no reason to invalidate someone's experience in that way. Because this is the hardest thing she's ever done, if you think about it. She didn't graduate high school. She's never taken college classes. It doesn't really seem like she's held a job for very long anyway. She's finally working towards something. And we have Gary on the other side tearing it down. Not only making it difficult for her to complete that, having to rework her schedule in order to take care of Leah or figure out a sitter or what have you, but also he's actively invalidating it to her face. "That book was easy, Amber. What I'm doing is harder, Amber." Basically telling her, "Yeah, you might have some things to do, whatever your little GED project is, but whatever I'm doing is more important, so this is how it's going to go. This is how it's going to be." The scene ends with Amber yelling to Gary, "You know, I don't usually talk to you like this. What? But I really can't stand you anymore." I believe Gary's voice is edited in to answer, "Fine, then leave," to when she says that. The scene closes out, and Amber's voiceover says, "This relationship is becoming unbearable." In Amber's next scene, not much has changed. We see Gary and one of his friends head off to the gym, and basically the two of them are just discussing how much Amber stresses out Gary and how Amber takes her stress out on Gary, which in turn stresses Gary out. So really, it's just the two of them bitching about Amber for 10 minutes. less than that, but you understand my drift. It's that kind of scene. Totally understandable, just really not worth recapping. The scene transitions back to Amber's apartment. Amber opens her door and invites one of her friends in, I guess, to visit, hang out, gives her a big hug, looks happy. She goes in to pick up Leah from her crib. I don't know if she was napping or what, but upon picking her up, realizes that her diaper is pretty much soaked through. Amber says that Gary must not have changed her before he left. So, whose responsibility is it? Are we just not checking on her? I need to know more about that. The scene continues to where she and her friend are just talking about Amber and Gary and just how it's not working out, but I need to back up and I need to think about this diaper, which I don't like to say, but here we are. Who was supposed to change her? I know Gary doesn't like to change her, and we've seen that Amber doesn't like to change her, and we see this isn't the first time that Leah has been put down without being changed first. But now it's gotten to the point where Amber says, unfortunately, in the show, she's pissed through her diaper. That is disgusting. That is disgusting for poor baby Leah, and that is disgusting for me to hear. Like, I don't want to hear that. And it's really interesting hearing how she says, I guess Gary didn't change her fucking diaper. Like, her voice really does get nearly a little demonic.
I'm guessing Gary didn't change her diaper.
Ah, my mistake. It's motherfucking diaper. Okay, I guess Gary didn't change her motherfucking diaper. Holy shit. Like, I understand being mad if it's really soaked through, but that kind of anger and that tone of voice, that wrath that's behind that scares me. We've already seen her be violent with Gary. There's not a lot you can do to surprise me at this point, but just hearing that when he's not even in the room, that's alarming. That's in front of a friend, and her friend doesn't even say anything about it. She just comes in the room and is like, oh yeah, of course he didn't. You're not a little concerned about how angry she just got? How very hateful her voice just became? I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. Like I said, the scene continues with Amber and her friend discussing just how she and Gary aren't working out anymore. At the end, Amber's friend asks her point blank, what would make you happy? What would make you happy? And Amber answers her very bluntly, leaving him. And that's how the scene ends out. I'm still hung up on the diaper. Like, someone needed to take care of that. Someone let that fall through the cracks. And how often does that happen? Just today it got caught on camera. When is it happening when it's not on camera? I'm not sure how much time passes between the last scene and this one, but whenever the next scene takes place, we have Amber commenting that the apartment is a complete mess. It looks like it's the morning time, taking care of Leah, walking around the apartment, and you do see just clothes piled up, dishes piled up. There's even a dirty cat litter box on the floor without a cover, which I can only imagine the smell. I have a cat, but his litter box is covered, and I kept that thing fucking clean when I had a small apartment. This looks almost like a borderline hoarder house. Not a great living situation, especially when you have a mobile child in the house, walking around, getting into things. Of course, it's hard to watch Leah if you have to worry about a pile of clothes falling on her at every point in your life. We see Amber and Gary get into an argument about how messy Amber thinks that Gary is.
All you do is go to school for 6 hours a week and watch the baby. You sleep in all morning.
Watching the baby is a
you
job. You
can't
gotta
find
understand
an hour a day
that.
To clean this house.
All of this stuff is not from me. You're a
okay.
dirty person.
Okay, that's
you're the laziest person I've ever freaking met in my life. You sit there, you open up something, and just leave it there. Everything, all your clothes, you throw it on the floor. I don't want to clean your mess.
Thank you. You don't want to do anything for me because you're selfish.
You need to get up with your fat, lazy ass and change your daughter.
Oh, okay.
You are a poor excuse
okay.
for a man.
Okay, a poor excuse for a man. You don't have to be here.
I'm done with you.
Okay. That's what you want? You want to break up with me? Mm. So when are you going to leave?
Oh, my God. Well, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to take care of my little baby girl. And
halfway.
I'm going to go to school, Gary.
Yeah. I'm not paying for your bills no more.
I'll figure out something. Then I'll be out of here.
You can do what you want.
Alright, Gary.
So obviously, I don't like Amber's language here and the way she's speaking to Gary, But I will say that I have lived with an uncleanly person, can we put it that way, as to not be too mean? Not that it's not deserved, but someone who would leave clothes everywhere. They'll be in the bathroom if he just took a shower. They'll be downstairs if he was running late for work and not giving a shit about just leaving them everywhere. Constantly leaving things out after you would open them. Like, couldn't get him to feed the cat and throw away the can. It's one or the other. He's either not going to feed the cat or he's going to feed the cat and leave the can out every fucking day, no matter how many fucking times you ask him to throw it the fuck away. So it gets very frustrating to have to see the same things happen over and over again when you've asked that person, please help, please help, please help, please do something. And I feel like that's what's happened here with Amber and Gary. However, whereas in my situation, I was trying to pull my weight and I ended up cleaning up after him, Amber in this argument straight up says, I don't want to clean your mess. At this point, Gary says back to her, you don't want to do anything for me, Amber, because you're selfish. Now, on the surface, that's not untrue, but I will say here, we have two people that are not willing to help each other at all. No matter how much the other person has on their plate, you have the other person here not giving a shit and thinking they have it worse, which unfortunately just leaves poor little baby Leah in the crosshairs, because who's actually suffering here? Who has a soaked through diaper here? Who has to walk around and live in a nearly hoarder house? Leah. That's who's suffering here, and they can't put their petty differences aside and stop blaming each other long enough to say, okay, fine, you know what, I'll clean this house just because Leah needs a safe space to play, or I'll change Leah, Gary, because that's one thing that Amber does bring up here. You need to change your daughter. We've seen him abdicate that duty more than once in this episode alone. So they both need to be picking up the slack here and just putting Leah first. Clearly, that's not happening. It's interesting to see Amber's reaction to Gary straight up asking her, when are you leaving? It sounds like she has some incredulousness in her voice when she's asking, you mean I'm going to go to work, go to school, take care of my baby, and find a new house, Gary? Yeah, Amber, that's what happens when you break up, and that's what happens when you have a child to take care of. He rightly answers, you know, I'm not paying your bills anymore. Is Amber getting child support confused with alimony? Because it sounds like she's expecting Gary to cover her personal bills as well as care for Leah, who, by the way, if I didn't mention, is sitting in between them on their floor mattress while they're having this argument. I mean, she doesn't look bothered at all. Imagine how normalized this must be at this point. She's literally just sitting there. She's got a smile on her fucking face. Whoa. This kid's not scared. She's not crying. She's not even reacting to the tension in the room. This is her every day. God, this poor fucking kid, poor baby Leah. The scene continues and Amber is shown walking to the other room as Gary is shown walking outside. Gary calls one of his friends up and says, yeah, I think we just broke up. And Amber, on the other hand, is calling around to different inns and hotels or motels, seeing what their weekly rates are. All running about, on the low end, $150 per week to $220 per week. And of course, they're not supplying any cribs or accessories in that manner either. So it's already looking like a tough move for Amber to make. I don't know what she thought. I'm not sure that she thought ahead. I guess she was thinking that Gary would move out of the house. It's clear she hasn't planned on where she and Leah would stay or how she would take care of Leah once she left. That seems like a big detail to overlook. I will say for the record here, she doesn't look sober in this scene. Not at all. So she could just be high too. Her voiceover actually closes out the scene by saying, it's harder to leave when I have to think about taking care of Leah too. What? How is it so easy for Leah to just leave her mind? How is it not the first thing you think of? Like when Macy left Ryan, she's already like, well, I'll have to move back home because I still have Bentley and I have to do this and blah, blah, blah. Amber's just, no, I'm not happy. Things aren't going my way. I have to leave. Which in some cases is totally understandable, but clearly she's not thinking ahead here. So I realized after I posted my last episode that I forgot to give a shout out to Leah's stepmom, Christina. So here's a shout out, Christina. We love you. Hope you're listening, which you're probably not, let's be realistic. But I also thought it would be as good a time as any to start a new segment of the show, since I did such a disservice to her in the last episode and didn't give her a shout out. I'm going to make up for it by introducing a new Christina fact every episode.
It's a Christina fact.
Our first Christina fact? I'm pretty sure her eyes are brown or hazel.
It's a Christina fact.
In Amber's final scene of the episode, she lets the viewer know that she found a motel she can afford, so she and Leah are heading out. She lets Gary know that she's going to be taking Leah to a motel and to help her pack Leah's things into the car. It's clear that Gary wasn't expecting her to actually up and leave. Despite all the shit he was talking, he didn't think it would actually come to this because they talk so much shit to each other all the time. Dude, that's what happens when you cry wolf. Like, when it eventually happens, that other person is floored. And they either rebel in a way to exert further power over the other person, or they're just shocked. And Gary, I feel like, is just shocked. He helps Amber get her things together and get Leah's things together. And at the very last minute before he's loading up the final item into the car, he tells Amber, you know, I wish it didn't have to be this way. I wish you weren't doing this, essentially. And Amber gets pretty mad. She essentially ignores what Gary says at first and continues to ask him to put whatever he has in the trunk or in the car, whatever. And he asks, did you hear what I said? And she's like, put it in the car because this is bullshit. You wait till the very last minute? No, fuck that. And she swears at him some more and I think calls him a mean name, which I'm not about, again. But I get why she's mad here. It was very clear for at least a couple hours, long enough for her to be packing everything, that she's leaving. She's really leaving. He did have that amount of time to say, hey, stop. I'm sorry, let's talk about this. I didn't know you were really going to leave. Was it pride? Is it stubbornness? Or was it shock, like I was thinking it was? It could have been either. Regardless, he didn't say anything to try to make her stay. And she's literally in the car. The final thing is being put in the trunk when he says this to her. I get the frustration. I can't even lie. I don't like the way she talks to him. But I understand why she's upset. Gary loads up the last item in the car and Amber drives away. Gary heads back in to his apartment all alone and the camera catches him crying. It's genuine. It's really sad to see, honestly. It hurts me that this has to happen. And it hurts me that he's so upset to see Amber leave when clearly she's treating him like shit and neither of them are happy. Amber pulls up to the motel and goes in asking for a room for a week. She walks into her room and it's pretty standard motel room. It doesn't look that bad from what we see. She does go in the bathroom and turns on the faucet and that seems to spray everywhere, but the camera doesn't focus in on roaches or anything gross like that. It's not dilapidated. It's not ideal, but once Amber has Leah's playpen set up and everything like that, she jumps on the bed with Leah, and you can just tell she is almost a different person. She's relieved. She is more calm, less irritated, and she can be a better mom. So I feel like being away from Gary, even though Gary is sad, it's way better for both of them and obviously better for Leah. We just need to get in better living spaces as well. Amber's scene closes out with the two of them on the bed, and we go into the montage. Next, we meet up with Macy. Macy reminds the viewer that she has moved back home with her parents since she and Ryan have split up, and we learn the news that Ryan has also now moved back home with his parents because he's lost his job as a diesel mechanic, or whatever the fuck he was doing. Well, that's suspicious. Didn't he just get home from a big, long work trip? So, I'm wondering if this lends a little credence to what I was saying about now he's kind of fucked up on drugs. Maybe he picked them up on that trip because now he's lost his job. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. But Macy continues to tell the viewer that it is extremely awkward now doing drop-offs. She has to go hand Bentley over to Ryan at his parents' house. And Jen and Larry are very nice people on the surface, and they've never been mean to Macy, not yet that we've seen. But I can totally get why you wouldn't want to come face-to-face with your ex's parents once a week, once every 2 weeks, however often they're seeing each other. It's just one of those ugh things that comes along with having a baby with someone you're not with. No judgment, but it definitely sucks, and it obviously sucks for Macy. She continues to tell us that Ryan typically doesn't say a lot when she brings Bentley over, but today he wanted to talk. They go upstairs, and it's a little bit of a flashback, deja vu, to the initial conversation they had before she moved out, where she told him, Ryan, if you want to have a relationship with me, you have to work on your relationship with Bentley. Let's kind of see what they get into in this conversation.
I don't even know what to say because I'm pretty lost in this situation right now. I mean, you've pretty much made up your mind, right?
Why would you say that?
Because
I didn't come back the first time you asked me?
No, I'm just saying. I don't know.
Well, what do you want?
It'd be great if we could work whatever out or whatever's left, or I don't know, because I don't know how you feel, to be honest with you.
I just know that for a year now, I've spent so much time worrying about our relationship and being miserable the whole time that for the next few months, I just need to focus on Bentley and school and making myself happy. And after I get there again, then I will figure out what I want.
But I want us to be together. It would be so much better for Bentley.
What would be good for Bentley is if his parents were happy. And if we're not happy together, then that's not what's best for him.
So a couple different interesting things happen in this conversation. First, we have Ryan, I think for the first time ever in Teen Mom, coming out and saying, Macy, I want to be with you. Unfortunately, what follows thereafter is, it would be so good for Bentley, when I was really hoping to hear something like, because I love you so much, or because I miss you so much, or I want our family back together. Instead, this kind of sounds like something he's probably parroting from Jen and Larry. I can just see Larry talking to him like, you know, it would be just so good for you, Bentley, if you could just get back together with Macy and y'all could be together again. You know, because it goes back to that intervention that they had with the two of them. Do you know anybody else with two sets of parents? I still don't understand why they felt the need to ask that, but it's just a very fundamentalist attitude that I do not subscribe to. The second most interesting thing about this conversation, I think, is seeing Macy hold so firm to her guns. And I salute you, girl. Back in the day, I didn't really care about Macy. Like, yeah, her story was interesting because she was the nicest of, I think, all the girls, or the most likable, I'll say, not necessarily the nicest because Caitlin is very nice, but the most likable of all the girls. And I watch this now with such admiration for her that I didn't have back then, because she's like, well, no, Ryan, I told you what I need to do. And she lays out exactly what she needs to do. Focus on herself, be happy, work on school, and focus on Bentley. Whoa, this girl has got her shit straight and her chakras balanced. I need to get there. That is where I want to be, to where I could have my baby daddy, which is non-existent, looking at me saying, I want to get back together with you. Because normally I would be like, oh, okay, I guess we can try one more time. And that's burned me in the past, you guys. I want to be like Macy, where she's just absolutely, no, Ryan, can you please stop talking to me about this? Ryan does end the conversation. I didn't put this part in the clip because it was already so long. He does tell Macy, well, whatever happens, I'm going to be there for you guys, or whatever, is actually what he says. It's very flippant, but at least he says it. Hopefully not parroting that from Jen and Larry. Hopefully he actually means that, but that's something only time will tell. In Macy's next scene, we see her make the trek out to visit her friends at college. She says here that they went to college 3 hours away, but I distinctly remember in the other episode them saying that a halfway point would be about 40 minutes for each of them. I'm not really good at math, but I think that's like not 3 hours away. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Regardless, we see Macy going down there to visit with them. She enters their dorm. They show her around. She's looking at all their pictures, and she mentions that, oh, hey, you need to put Bentley up there on their picture wall. And yes, they should. I'm a little concerned as to why they didn't have a picture of Bentley up there already, as we know he is a very cute little potato bug. Macy and her friends have plans to go out that night, and they're all getting ready. As they get ready, Macy's just kind of updating them on how Ryan has been acting. Unusually, Ryan has been acting really mature towards her, she says. The way he's been talking to her, the things he's been saying, she just feels like it's a different Ryan, and so she needs to pay attention to that. And she also lets them know that he's texting her as they're talking, so he's really trying hard. Kiwi Keeley is there, and she says, well, you know what? That's exactly what he needs to be doing. He needs to be chasing after you. He needs to be trying hard. We also learn during this scene that Macy has never been out to a bar when she's been single before. So it's going to be a brand new experience for her and her friends, and she kind of gets to have a baby-free night. I'm happy for her. She deserves it. She doesn't get to do this very often, unlike what we see with Farrah, unlike what we see with Ryan. And it's about time that she gets some time to herself with her girls, just to go out and let her hair down. The scene continues with footage of Macy and her friends out at a bar having a great time. She looks like she's having fun, dancing, listening to music, and she does say that Ryan didn't stop texting her all night, but she enjoyed being chased after for once. Good for you, Macy girl, get it. I'm all about this life, and I love her energy here, so more power to her. You think the scene ends there, but we do get a little glimpse of what Ryan is doing that night. He is at home with Bentley. What? Oh my god, I can't actually believe he's at home with Bentley. We see Ryan sitting on the couch and Bentley standing up against an armoire or footstool. I'm not sure what you call those things, but he's standing up against one of those in front of Ryan, and Ryan's trying to talk to him. Hey, what should we do tonight? And Bentley doesn't answer because he's a baby. Ryan even says, oh, you don't talk too much, do you? And that's where the scene ends, my friend. Oh, it is so satisfying to see Ryan have to sit at home with the baby. In Macy's next scene, we see her the next day. And she lets us know that that day, Ryan is going to take Bentley out with some of Ryan's friends to the aquarium. And we get some great footage of little potato bug Bentley and Ryan and two of Ryan's buddies out at the aquarium. And it's a lot of, oh, Bentley, look, look, Bentley. And then, of course, penguins are gangsta. I did hear that. And they are. I fucking love penguins. It really looks like Bentley is enjoying himself and getting to spend some time with his dad, which doesn't happen very often, so I'm very happy to see this scene, and I recommend you give it a watch if you're watching along with me or, you know, listening to my opinions about what the best scenes in Teen Mom are, and this is one of them, so mark that down for sure. It's always so great to see Bentley having a good time. The scene transitions back to Macy in her friend's dorm, and she's just chilling on the couch in the morning, looking at her phone, pictures of Bentley it's supposed to be. I'm not sure if that's really what she was looking at. And she tells her friends, all right, well, I've got to get on my way. I've got to go pick up Bentley and head back to Chattanooga. So her friends walk her to her car, and she heads on the road back home. And I gotta say, Macy always looked so cool when she was driving. Any driving scene I see of Macy, probably still, she just looks so cool. She's got her sunglasses on, she's usually wearing a tank top, her seats in the car look like leather interior or faux leather, either way, it looks so cool. She just looks awesome. Like, I want to be that. I want to be that girl driving. Again, once again, admiration for Macy. Woohoo, I love it. Next, we see Macy picking up baby Bentley from Ryan's parents' house, also Ryan's house, but Ryan's not there. I don't know where Ryan is, but Macy comes in, gives Bentley a big, big hug and a big greeting, saying how much she missed him and to never, ever leave her again. It's very cute. You could tell she's very happy to see Bentley and that she missed him a lot, even though she was only gone for one day. She leaves the house with baby Bentley and his things, and her voiceover lets the viewer know that as much as she hates to admit it, she wished Ryan had been there when she had picked up Bentley. It just makes me wonder why he wasn't. Why wasn't he there? I don't understand. The scene continues and we see Macy at home with Bentley, back on their normal schedule. She said it was great being a college girl for one day, but now it's back to single mom life, is actually how her voiceover puts it. Bentley's playing with his toy truck walker thing, honking the horn, and then it's time to eat. Unfortunately, little potato bug Bentley is a very grumpy potato bug when it comes to eating his food today for some reason, and is very fussy, not wanting to take the food, crying, whimpering, making a fuss, just every little bit that he can do for a 1.5-year-old. Macy's voiceover says that when Bentley gets grumpy like that, she kind of wishes Ryan were around to help her out. I don't know what Ryan would do, since we didn't really see him connect with Bentley other than showing him fish, but I guess it's just the idea of having a companion there to kind of commiserate with, perhaps? That's the only thing that I can really think of. She texts Ryan right after her voiceover says this and asks, hey, do you want to work this out? Wow, okay, so... Once again, I don't know what these time frames are like. How long has it been that he's been proving himself to you, Macy? Is it really just this one day away from Bentley that has inspired you to give him another chance? I'm hoping that there's more that the cameras just didn't catch, because Macy, we've really seen her make some good decisions so far, and I'm hoping she's not jumping back into this so quickly. Her voiceover does say that maybe she and Ryan aren't meant for each other, but it might be better than being alone. Ooh, girl, I can tell you that is dangerous thinking. Trust me, sometimes you are better alone. Even when you think you're not, sometimes you really are. In Macy's next scene, she and Ryan go on a picnic date. Macy's voiceover tells the viewer that she's been so impressed with Ryan's interest in Bentley. Oh no, I'm sorry, effort with Bentley. That she's wanting to give Ryan another chance. Okay, I guess. We see them sitting down having a picnic. No picnic table.
We call it a picnic table for having a picnic.
And Ryan matter-of-factly asks Macy, so are you gonna be my girlfriend? Macy responds, when? Am I gonna be? When are you talking about? And Ryan says, right now. Macy tells Ryan, well, I mean, I want to, but I'm not going back to being miserable like we used to be. We need to fix things and work on things. And already, Ryan is kind of pushing back.
I need you to be my best friend again.
Well, yeah, you don't think I need that either?
Well, I can't be your best friend if you're not going to be my best friend.
Well, I think that's something that we need to work on together. I mean, you're not going to just get it from me if I don't get it from you.
Well, that's how I am.
I guess you got to work on it.
You got to work on it. You think we can do it?
Do I think so? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to?
Yeah.
Okay, then I will.
You give me a kiss?
All right, I got 10, you got 90.
Boys go 90, girls go 10.
Whatever. 50-50. Well, I told you you're going to have to work with me, so let's go.
I'll work with you. I'll work,
you better come.
You work 80.
You better come a lot closer than that.
Come on.
You went all the way.
You don't want one?
Okay, so essentially all's well that ends well. They end up going back to Macy's house and cuddling with little potato bug Bentley on the couch. But I want to analyze a little bit what happened at the end of their conversation there with the kiss, where he says, oh, I'll take a kiss if you go 90 and I go 10. Maybe this is an inside joke between them because it seems like they're both taking it very lightly, but me as an outsider and someone who picks up on a lot of little things like that, this is just a precursor for more trouble. He already isn't wanting to put enough effort in to give her a fucking kiss. Okay, maybe they're joking, maybe I'm taking it too seriously, but if it were me, I would be legit pissed off right now. Like, really, we just got back together and you can't even just literally meet me halfway for a fucking kiss? Again, if it's a joke between them, totally different story. Have we seen this joke on camera before? No. Have we seen them joke at all on camera before with each other? No, we haven't. So why would we ever think that they would start joking now? I don't know. So that's why I'm a little hesitant to take it that way. I really don't like that ending. He's already just trying to do the bare minimum and seeing what he can get away with. Next up in the episode is lovely Farah. I have a feeling it might be a short Farah episode once again because this clip is very quick and there's not a lot of substance to it. We open up with Farah looking over Sophia's hospital bills just from doctor's visits and probably still from her birth. I don't know how long it takes to pay that stuff off. But her voiceover is letting the viewer know that having a baby is way more expensive than she thought. The scene cuts to her working at BW3, bussing tables, walking around. There's pretty much no one there. She walks outside and gives her friend a phone call. I'm not sure which friend, I wasn't paying attention. And she just complains about what I just said. It's dead here, I'm not making any money, I need a higher paying job. Fair, fair. I mean, don't we all? And especially Farah, because she has a baby. The scene cuts once more to her back at home because she also has to keep up with culinary school homework. So cool to see that she's still doing that. I hadn't heard about it in the last few episodes because we've been so focused on stupid fucking boys. But I'm happy to hear that she is still doing the culinary school thing. And we actually see her somewhat successfully studying with Sophia on her lap. Congratulations, Farah. I think you are the first girl in the franchise to successfully do that. You're working on a math problem, and even though Sophia's fussing, I think you finished it, or at least continued to calculate. So that was pretty impressive. Remember, guys, credit where credit is due. Credit right there to Farah for studying with a baby. Of course, the scene ends with Farah saying she can't keep up with everything at once and shows her falling asleep on the bed with Sophia with the homework spread out all over. Another kind of cute scene, which is totally relatable if you ask me. I mean, it's so easy to be overwhelmed with work and have things kind of all over the place. And you know what? I'm just going to take a quick nap here. And seeing mother-daughter nap time, pretty cute. Farah's next scene is another short one, but a doozy for sure. She is shown heading off to the doctor to get some birth control. So that was the protection we heard about in the description. Great, just when I thought we were done talking about boys. She is asked in the doctor's appointment whether or not she's sexually active, and she gives a really long-winded response.
Are you sexually active at this time?
I did meet somebody, but I cut him out of my whole life. I'm just taking precautions now and learning and doing the right thing for the future, you know?
That's very, very smart of you.
Yes.
Like, I don't know about you, but I'm giving a simple yes or no to that question. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. I'm not going to tell you about the most recent disaster date that I had. I'm just not going there with my OBGYN. I can't. But I do like how she takes the compliment and says, yes, that is very smart of me.
Are you going to tell your mom that you're going on birth control?
I didn't plan on it just because I don't think it's really my mom's decision. Like, I'm an adult now and I'm making my own decisions.
The scene is edited to make it look like the doctor gives her a very strange look after she says that. And I can't tell if that's real or if it's pulled from another part of their filming or what, but I don't disagree with what Farah is saying here. As much as I don't want her dating, this birth control visit is the right move. And hearing her say, well, no, I'm going to make my own decisions because I'm an adult now and this is what I want to do. Honestly, she's taking control of her life and her autonomy. So I can't fault her for this move at all. I can fault her for going into too much detail about her sexual activity, But I'm not going to come down on her for having this appointment in general. It's always best to just work with the precautionary and look ahead. So good on you, Farrah, for making this decision. The doctor's appointment continues, and the doctor shows her the different options for birth control. Shows her a diaphragm. Of course, you have the pill. They go over the depot shot, and they talk about the NuvaRing. And that's the one Farrah ultimately decides on. Before she leaves, the doctor lets her know, okay, we'll send you home with a few samples. You have to put these in the fridge or else they'll not work or whatever. I had no idea you had to put NuvaRing in the fridge. I don't think they make that anymore. Doesn't it cause cancer now or something? I'm not sure. But I had no idea until I saw this episode back in the day that you had to put NuvaRing in the fridge. And I'm glad I saw this because I would know never to choose that birth control for myself because I didn't have my personal fridge I can put my birth control in without my parents seeing. And I have to ask myself why Farrah didn't think of that. Why not when the doctor tells you, oh, you have to put this in the fridge, say, wait a second. Why don't we think of a different something that will help me not have babies? Because I can't put this in the fridge. Clearly, I'm not telling my mother about this birth control, and my mother opens the fridge. So it's kind of shitty on the doctor for not saying anything, and I can't believe Farrah didn't have the foresight to think about that. Whatever. The scene continues to see Farrah at home, placing her birth control way in the back of the vegetable drawer, hoping no one will see it. And the scene closes out, going to the scrapbook animation and a ticking time bomb on the side of her picture. Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what that is. When we next see Farrah, I believe it's supposed to be later in the day. It doesn't feel like it, but that could just be because there was so much time in between her last scene and this one. But supposedly later in the day from when she hides her birth control in the refrigerator, she is also assisting her mother in planning a dinner party for that night since she's going to culinary school. She is apparently assisting a chef that Deb already hired. Your guess is as good as mine. Farrah and Deb walk into the kitchen, and Deb introduces the chef she's hired, Elaine, to Farrah, and says that Farrah is in culinary school and will be assisting you tonight. The chef doesn't say anything, and she knows she's on camera. I feel like this may have been a surprise, because she doesn't look thrilled, but she looks extremely aware that whatever she says or does will be captured for the ages, so I think she just stays quiet. We next see Farrah helping her out and helping her move things out of the fridge for preparation. Farrah's voiceover comes in as the scene freezes, and she says, I think I picked the wrong day to hide my birth control. Any day is the wrong day to hide your birth control in the refrigerator where your family frequents all the time. All the time. And did you just forget that this dinner party was coming up? There's so much poor planning here. I don't know where to start. And the poor chef, you know, now she's embroiled in this birth control scandal. The scene continues with Farrah and Chef Elaine clearing out the refrigerator, and Deb saying, well, if we need to move things out to make more room, we can just take that out and put it in our other house. The Abrahams own two houses on the same street. One is supposed to be their guest house. Whew, okay, so it's that kind of family. Well, Michael, Farrah's dad, does indeed have to move a few things from that fridge to the one in their guest house. And one of the things he moves, and I'm not quite sure how the packing works. I thought Farrah put it in the vegetable drawer, but it seems like she just shoved it in the back of the fridge. My bad. I don't really fucking know. But he ends up taking her birth control to the guest house. Farrah just watches him as he walks out the door with her birth control. Goodbye. Wave goodbye to your NuvaRing. It's gone. And there's a scene with Michael at the other house putting the things in the fridge there, and it's made to look that he happens upon the birth control, and he has a very blank look on his face. The scene ends there, goes to the scrapbook, and the ticking time bomb has exploded. Ooh, wonder where we're going to go with this one. Farrah starts off her next scene by her voiceover letting the viewer know that she's pretty sure that her dad saw her birth control and she knows she's in for a lecture.
Well, let's put it this way. You should need to have a need for birth control, okay? Didn't we learn 18 months ago?
18 months ago.
All right, this is what I'm asking you to do. Don't go out. Don't put yourself in any position where you need birth control.
He says birth control funny.
Birth control. The bottom line is this, Farrah. We've been through this thing, and we've got a wonderful gift out of a mistake, okay? There are, you know, there's different ways to protect yourself while taking birth control.
They even edited the audio so he continued to say birth control in that sentence. You can tell there's an edit there. Oh my God, I love it.
And that means not being out because you're not legal to be in a bar. And I don't care if you're going to friends.
Michael, why are we talking about bars and shit? We're talking about birth control.
Because it usually...
Why is birth control in bars?
The point is, you don't put yourself in a position you won't need it.
There should be more birth control in bars, if you ask me. More condoms. Have Plan B behind the counter. Come on, guys. This is 2021 here. We gotta get with the times. But I wonder if Farrah's not trying to say, Michael, birth control has more uses than simply preventing pregnancy. A lot of women take it for medical reasons and health reasons, like for endometriosis or PMS or PMDD or... Sorry, I'm really high. I can't think of all the terrible things that women have to go through that they might need birth control to help with. But there are many, and there are many different uses than just going out to get fucked. And it's such... Michael says so many Catholic or Christian things here, it makes me really sick. I'm a recovering Catholic, for those that don't know. Here we have Michael saying things like, well, there are other ways than birth control to protect yourself, like don't do anything at all. That's a very Catholic thing to say. I heard that quite a bit growing up. I totally understand Farrah specifically not needing to be going out, finding boys, and having sex. But if she wants to be taking birth control, that really is none of our business, in my opinion. She's allowed to make her own choices. Michael ends out the scene by saying you need to think about Sophia and building a life for yourself and concentrating on those things, not taking birth control. And finally, we meet up with Caitlin. We open up with Caitlin and Tyler going bowling once again. It's just the two of them and maybe some friends who are off camera, perhaps. Caitlin's voiceover lets the viewer know that since the big fight with Butch that we heard about in the last episode, ugh, just awful, she has been spending most of her time with Tyler. But when she's at home, she just tries to keep her distance and keep away from Butch and her mother. It looks like she and Tyler are having the best time. They're lovey-dovey. They're encouraging each other when they're bowling, making lots of jokes, and laughing quite a bit. And it's very clear that she's happy here, which I love to see. Love to see it. The scene continues to later on in the day when Caitlin is back at home. So I know there was a question in the last episode, did she move in with Tyler at the end? No, she did not. Not yet. I think that happens in this episode because, as we're about to hear, Caitlin's mom wants to have a talk with her. She lets Caitlin know they're moving to Richmond. I know when I first saw this episode, we have a Richmond where I'm from, so I'm like, oh, are they from here? No, there are like 20,000 Richmonds all over the United States. But I guess Richmond is far enough away to where it will pretty severely impact Caitlin's life. She asks her mom, well, how am I going to get to school? Her mom says, oh, well, we'll figure it out. But if you have to ask that question, I have to infer that you're moving pretty far away, at least a half hour is my guess in my head. And this also means she's going to be uprooted and taken away from Tyler, who is her one rock throughout all of this.
Dude, it's bull.
Why are you giving me an attitude?
I'm not giving you an attitude.
Hey, you should go look in the mirror and look at your face.
It's a done deal. We just signed the lease.
Cool, have fun.
I don't want to leave. But we gotta do what we gotta do. Economy's bad.
So why the hell are we moving to Richmond?
Because it's the cheapest place we can find. I found an apartment for $400 a month.
I don't understand how you guys think that moving's good for us. Whatever.
Listen, this is the future. This is the plan. This is what we like to do.
It's fine. You guys can go. I've been living by myself. I'm used to it.
Okay, well, what's the big problem then?
It's always about you guys. You never even know all the that I've gone through. You guys weren't even there.
I know. It's a terrible life.
You don't even know what the hell I'm going through now because you guys aren't there.
Come on, okay. Damn.
Nobody gives a about
Caitlin.
Oh,
stop it.
It's true.
Wow, I can't stand how dismissive he is of her. Oh, come on, Caitlin. Stop it. Oh, yeah, it's a terrible life. Y'all need to stop, really, for a second and reflect. Did you even consult her? Are you even taking into account the severe trauma she just went through having to place her child for adoption? I've gotten a lot better at saying place. You guys like that? And then not consulting her about other major changes in her life over which she has very little control. I understand that as an adult, you really don't consult a child on big things like moving or reconstruction or something ridiculous like that, but I feel like maybe they should have made an exception in Caitlin's case, just understanding the huge trauma and change and sacrifice she's just had to make for her life, thinking maybe we should give her a little bit of input, a little bit of control, even just so she knows she's heard. I think that would have been very beneficial here. Instead, we have them, oh, guess what? We're moving. The lease is already signed. Yeah, okay, bye. What? What? You're uprooting her whole life. And you're just telling her this now. I wonder when they're moving. It sounds imminent. He found a $400 apartment. I'm not excited to see this new place. I have a feeling it's going to be a downgrade. And like, I understand you have to sometimes, but just, I'm thinking what's best for Caitlin, and I don't think this move is it. It's during Caitlin's next scene that we learn exactly how far away Richmond is from them. Caitlin's voiceover tells us about 60 miles, 6-0, as far as I heard. That is substantial. That is far away. How will you get to school like that? Caitlin and Tyler are shown discussing this. Caitlin's letting Tyler know the news, and they're just kind of talking about what this means. She's distraught, you know, she's very upset about this, crying, telling Tyler that she doesn't want to move to Richmond. And Tyler agrees, he doesn't want her to go. But what are they going to do? Tyler suggests, well, maybe talk to my mom?
And now I have nowhere to go.
Why don't you talk to my mom?
I'm not going to force your mom to let me stay here for something that she does not believe in. I just don't want to start problems between you and your mom. And plus, I also feel like I'm intruding on your guys' space.
You're not intruding on our space. You're making my space better.
I don't know what I'm going to do, but there's no way I'm moving away from Tyler.
I gotta say, Tyler is being a damn sweetheart right now. He's not holding back at all. He's saying exactly what's on his heart and on his mind. And I'm really touched that it's looking out for Caitlin. It's an unfortunate situation. I don't want this for anybody, especially someone like Caitlin who's just gone through so much turmoil. I hope that they're able to come to some kind of conclusion. I don't know how I personally feel about the two of them living together, but I do know that, I think I said in the last episode, you gotta do what you gotta do to get the fuck out of Butch and April's den of crack and alcohol. But really, Caitlin needs to get away from there, no matter how you look at it. And if that means moving in with Tyler, then I'm gonna back that, even though there's a bigger part of me that says it's a bad idea. I need her to be safe. And you know how I feel about protecting the young and stupid or the young and naive. I just need to make sure you're sheltered. And I think Tyler's place would provide that for her if there's no other place she can stay. In Caitlin's very next scene, we see her and Tyler sitting down with Tyler's mom, Kim, and they're popping the question. They're asking if Caitlin could stay with Tyler and Kim instead of moving 60 miles away to Richmond. Caitlin opens the conversation in a kind of awkward way. She approaches it in a very casual manner, basically saying that Butch and her mother are moving away and she, quote unquote, doesn't feel like going. And Kim's response to that is understandable. You don't feel like it? I mean, could you go if you wanted to go? And to that, Caitlin answers, well, I think if I go, they would honestly make me feel like my decision to place Carly for adoption was the absolute worst decision I could ever make, because they already make me feel like that when I'm there now. And that's not false. Obviously, from what we've seen between her and Butch, she is made to feel pretty poorly about her decisions that she made for Carly. But I feel like coming at Kim in this way really underplays the amount of abuse that is happening in that home. And maybe Kim is already aware and Caitlin doesn't feel like she has to repeat herself, but I feel like now's a really good time to be like, no, Kim, you don't understand. Like, they swear at me and they don't even consider me in their life decisions. It's completely an unnurturing environment and I need to get out of there. I feel like that may have been a better angle to approach it with, but maybe from Caitlin and Tyler's background, they've learned minimal conflict is the best way to go. Caitlin does say, I was hoping I could just stay here. You can tell there's some audio editing happening when that question is presented, so I'm not sure how she really phrased it. But Kim, you can tell she's hesitant. She understands what Caitlin is going through to a point because she was married to Butch in the past. Don't forget, Butch is Tyler's father, and April and Butch are married. And this is Kim, Tyler's mother, who is Butch's ex-wife. Tyler's mom. Wow. Okay. So she understands what it's like to live with Butch. So she tells Caitlin, look, it's going to be temporary. You won't be homeless, but it's not going to be a forever thing if you stay here with us. And she also lays out some ground rules. She asks Tyler, okay, well, tell me some ground rules you think would be in place here. And they both agree that they would obviously have to stay in separate bedrooms. So no further hanky-panky you two. And I wonder, like, maybe it wouldn't be better just to get her on birth control so you know that they're being safe? Because if you're living in the same house and they've already had a kid, I think you're kind of fooling yourself to say that they're not going to be sneaking around. But I understand it's her house, her rules, that kind of thing. And what's most important here is that she did say yes. She did ultimately allow Caitlin to not go to Richmond to avoid that probably awful atmosphere with Butch and April together. And she's allowing Caitlin to stay in her home. So thank you so much, Kim, because Caitlin really needs this right now. She needs an escape. She needs stability. And I'm hoping that she can find that with you. It's not long after that scene before Caitlin is getting ready to go collect her stuff from her old house and move it into Kim and Tyler's house. We see Tyler and Caitlin in Tyler's kitchen, kind of talking about what they're expecting when they go to April and Butch's to pick up Caitlin's things. Tyler says that he just hopes that everything stays calm and nothing is said, because Tyler doesn't want to be disrespectful, but if Butch starts running off at the mouth, essentially, he's not going to let that fly. Good for you, Tyler. I like seeing you stand up for yourself and kind of having a game plan ready to go just in case, because you never know. Caitlin agrees, and she's just mentioning all the reasons why she doesn't want to be there. All the reasons that she should have said to Kim, honestly. She's talking about how they don't even care about her, as I was mentioning before, and just how difficult the living situation is there in general. She mentions that their water got shut off. Holy shit, that's another level. I mean, I'm not sure if she's technically still a minor at this point, but clearly she's still a baby. She needs to be taken care of. So I'm happy that she will be spending, hopefully, some time with Kim and Tyler. The scene transitions into later that night when Tyler, Kim, and Caitlin are taking the big old minivan over to pick up Caitlin's things. Caitlin and Tyler both take a deep breath before they walk in and start to go collect. Tyler says hi to his dad, who surprisingly greets him with a big hug and happy to see him greeting. So that was a nice start. Caitlin goes in and hugs her mom, and she says, all right, well, we're just going to go grab my stuff. And Caitlin's mother, April, tells her, okay, well, I already bagged a few things. Caitlin walks into her room and sees that all of her shit has been put into garbage bags. It's ready to go. Now, there are two ways you can take this, and I'll tell you right off the bat, Caitlin doesn't take it very well. But the first way you could take this is that April is being very helpful. Packing your shit when you're moving fucking sucks. That's the worst part of moving, especially if you hire movers, because then they do the really hard part. So the hard part for you is just getting all your shit together. April's done that for her and honestly probably saved her a lot of time because there are a lot of garbage bags. But at the same time, you could also take that as, okay, get your stuff and get the fuck out of my house. And I think that's how Caitlin is taking it here, unfortunately. She goes into her room and checks all her drawers. They're completely cleared out, not one thing left. And I wonder what her mom might have found in those drawers, you know, because she looks really pissed off. But I don't know, not my business, not my place. Caitlin tells Tyler that she's really unhappy with this situation, and Tyler says, I'm really sorry that happened. He helps her get her things, and they head on out to the car. Caitlin hugs April one last time before she leaves. It's edited in, so I'm not sure when April actually says this, but April does say, I love you, even if you don't think that I do. And Caitlin responds, I know, Mom. And that part is on video. Her mouth is moving with her words, so we know she says that there. So I'm wondering what April really said. But I'm hoping that she really did tell Caitlin that she loved her, no matter how she said it. It's very clear that Caitlin feels that April just doesn't care about her. She even tells Tyler as they're walking out, I just feel like she doesn't care. She tells Kim in the car as they're driving away, I just feel like she doesn't care. All my shit was bagged up already. And I totally get feeling that way. With her upbringing and what she's experienced between Caitlin and Butch, I see that. I understand that. But if I'm watching this scene and I'm watching April, I'm going to say that she does care. I think that she and Butch both care in their own weird way, even though they're both like fucking selfish assholes. Even Butch says, hey, the door is always open at our new place, which is pretty nice. I always think sentiments like those are very important, and I'm happy to see Butch extending that here. So I think to say that they don't care about her at all isn't correct, because it's clear that this is upsetting to them. At least from what I see on film. They're not expressing that, don't get me wrong, outside of what April says and what Butch says about their door always being open. They're not imploring her to stay or please come with us, we're really going to miss you. There's none of that. But in their own way, they're trying to show we care and we're going to miss you. Maybe they also know this is the best thing for her, so they're not trying to stop her. There's a lot of elements to this. It's a really interesting scene to watch. Really looking at April's face, you can tell she's sad. She's going to miss her daughter. But just based on everything we've seen last episode, this episode, and everything Caitlin said just before this little scene, their water being turned off, no, it's time to go. Her scene ends there and closes out with Caitlin's voiceover saying that she hopes someday she and her mom can put the adoption behind them and move on. The final scene of episode 4 of Teen Mom OG has Caitlin and Tyler heading to their separate bedrooms after kissing each other goodnight. Macy and Ryan laying down for bed together as a newly reunited couple, or at least just cuddling in bed, maybe they're not going to sleep. Deb and baby Sophia sleeping in bed together because Miss Farah decided to go out. We actually see a clip of her at a little party. Of course they had to throw that in, and of course she had to go out. And it rounds back to Amber sleeping with Leah in the motel bed. And with that, my good friends, we are halfway through season 1 of Teen Mom OG. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this session of About This Time of Day. It was so much fun having a little bit of a palate cleanser from the last few serious episodes we had. I loved laughing with you guys. I hope you'll join me next time so we can laugh some more, where we'll be discussing episode 5 of Teen Mom OG, A Little Help. And I think it's safe to say that these girls definitely need, you know, just a little help. In the meantime, you can catch us on Instagram at @attodpodcast on Instagram. Same handle on Twitter at @attodpodcast on Instagram and Twitter. That's the acronym for the show About This Time of Day. There you'll find some different cool things like bad art I like to do for every session, updates on when the next session will be coming out, and of course, previews for each session's companion strain. So, as the name of this episode would have you believe, the girls definitely did a lot of moving on and a lot of moving forward in their lives. Amber and Caitlin, they're literally moving households. That's a big change, and that's going to bring a lot of interesting moments, I'm sure. Macy's moving a bit backwards, but Bentley's learning about fish, so I think it's okay. And Farrah? Well, Farrah's probably moving on to a new form of contraception.
Birth control.
Strung out a week?